just talk. Now here's the part where we just
Now's
talk.
The time. What a week, you guys. The Bernie memes have been
fire.
Oh, absolute fire.
I
so
feel
good.
Like that is the one thing that we are as a country united in.
I know.
It's something so like beautiful about how consistently amazing Bernie Sanders is in my mind. He's just like that one meme. The first meme I saw was like Bernie looks like he dressed for the inauguration like it wasn't the only thing he had to do that day.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like, his it whole
was
day.
Like, yeah, it was like it, he dressed like the inauguration was on his to-do list but wasn't his whole day. And I'm like, and then
100%.
He was like, he told his wife, like, I'm going to swing by Joe's thing real quick. Yes. Like he's on the way so to the post true. Office. It's amazing. I mean, we love Grandpa Bernie for sure. Like, oh man, just... Mwah, chef's kiss.
Mittens.
The mittens. Which, does anyone wear mittens anymore? I did not think that mittens were something that people like. They're not practical at all. Like,
no.
I did not think.
Not functional in the least bit.
That mittens were a thing that people who were over the age of like maybe five wore anymore. But Grandpa Bernie does.
I think that's the age when you can start doing it again, right? It's like when you can be cantankerous. You can be cantankerous as a toddler and as an old person. It's mittens. You can wear mittens as like a child and you can wear mittens as a grandpa.
Yeah, because you can't do anything in mittens. So you need to not need to do anything. Which, like, I feel like you're either real old or you're real young. If you're in the middle, you got stuff you got to do. You got to button buttons. You got to be on your phone.
That's right.
There's like...
Nope.
You got to be able to tie your own shoes.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, it's like slip-on shoes. Slip-on shoes are for toddlers and old
people. Yeah, we know that Grandpa Bernie has some slip-ons for real. Like, I would love a close-up of whatever he was wearing to the inauguration, what shoes he had on. They were like non-slip shoes. Gotta love it.
Well, I found on Twitter, like a week or so ago, a story that will bring up some feelings for all of us, I think. And the title of it was from New York Times. It says, jobless women are selling nudes on OnlyFans, are struggling to pay bills. I mean, if that doesn't scream the pandemic and where we're at right now as a whole.
I saw something that said that all of the job losses for December, 100% of them were women. And then I was like, what? Well, that is obviously, that cannot be true. And I fucking looked at it, 140,000 jobs lost, all of them women in December.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, that's I feel like wild. This is kind of just a larger scale of something that has always been happening. I mean, I think that like OnlyFans, it makes it easy. It gives like a very easy platform, although... I don't know if this has changed, but I do know that OnlyFans kind of like made it very hard for sex workers in particular to be able to sell nudes and things like that on there because Bella Thorne pulled what she pulled and they had to change all of their like the way that they took money.
I don't know this. I don't know that story. What's the Bella Thorne thing?
So it's been a long time. So I apologize if I get any of this wrong, but she got an OnlyFans. For like, she was like, I'm gonna get an OnlyFans sign up if you want to see my nudes, right? And it ended up like being like millions of dollars or something like this, like very, very quickly. And it overwhelmed the site. They weren't able to like pay out, or like there was a big issue. And then on top of that, she didn't give them nudes. Like, she gave them like pictures of her in bikinis or lingerie or something. And so then a bunch of people were like asking for refunds, and it like totally like fucked up OnlyFans.
Oh.
And so then what happened was a lot of people who rely on OnlyFans as a means of income were drastically affected because they changed the amount that you could charge per like piece of content.
That's weird.
And how much you could be paid out at a time. So this entitled woman, Bella Thorne, who did not need to start this in the first place, ended up screwing over like a bunch of people who actually did rely on it for their income. So
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Thanks, Bella Thorne.
I mean, I think you got to do what you got to do, man. And this fucking year has been tough. Dude, if you could rock it, if I had a body that people would pay Girl, for.
You do. You do. Let's be clear. Somebody but will. Yeah. Everybody will pay for, you know, like anything. Anyone can have an OnlyFans if they want to. I actually think I know people who are sex workers or who've been cam girls and now have OnlyFans and things like that. And like, I actually think that, you know, that community is one of the most body positive communities that I've seen.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, I mean, I know people who are cam girls or have OnlyFans of all shapes and sizes. And
well, that's actually that's beautiful then. And I do like anything that makes it easier and safer for women in that industry. So, I'm all for it.
Listen, I'm all for it too. I just think that, like, it says a lot about where we are as, I don't know, like, just, you know, with people having lost their jobs and, you know, it's, hey, listen, I'm with you. Great outlet. I'm glad that people have that option, have that outlet. It just, you know, our economy is just so tough right now that that's kind of the place where people are. And they're just like, if I can make money doing this, then, well, hey, good for you.
Yeah, I think any kind of like gig economy job speaks to like where we are as a nation and like where we were even before the pandemic. The fact that so many people that I know have to work more than one job, or they have to work a job and drive Postmates or drive for Lyft or do whatever else. Like, I think that it speaks to where we are, like, as a country, that so many people are struggling so much
just to pay rent.
Right. That, I mean,
just rent.
Yeah. So like any of these additional things that would be considered like side hustles to make an extra however much money, like it's just, it's so hard. And then on top of that, to have this thing. I mean, I know so many people who are in the entertainment industry, right? Or like trying to be going on auditions or doing stand up or whatever it is, who were struggling already and in their off time working for Uber. And now they can't audition or they can't do stand up. So on top of that, and Lyft isn't really as much of a thing right now either, because people aren't going anywhere. So it really does limit the options that you have in order to make money, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, people are getting really creative. I've seen a couple people on my Facebook feed who have turned to like starting a Rice Krispie treat business out of their home and stuff like that. And like Etsy stores have exploded. And so, you know,
my neighbor upstairs is selling pizzas. He's making pizzas.
Yeah, like, I've seen a few people doing
like
that.
Gourmet pizzas, which are, they're good, but and I'm all for it. I'm like total support, but I'm like, that's
where,
you know,
we are.
Where he's at right now. He's got to be doing something out of his own apartment. He's a chef, and he's, you know, had to like invest money in like pizza making supplies and a special oven and all this stuff in his apartment. You know what I mean?
It's hard. I mean, it's very hard. And again, I feel like I've said it a million times, just none of us thought we were going to be a year in, you know, and we're almost a year in. And like,
dude, have you guys heard? They just released in LA Times, I guess the thing is it that clinics and stuff like that are throwing out vaccines every day. So people have started lining up to just be like, don't throw it away. Like, throw that shit into my arm, son.
Yep.
Like, now, please.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people here in Los Angeles, obviously people of means, very well off people, are going to states where it's like opened up to non-residents, like Florida, and like getting it there and like coming back.
Yeah.
Wow.
The other thing too is Garcetti said at the rate they're going right now, we won't be vaccinated here in LA until 2022.
Jesus, and I'm like, Christ.
No.
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 Not when you're throwing them away. That's bullshit.
No, I'm not going to wait until 2022. I'm
like, no.
I said no. Like, okay, thank you, mayor or whatever. Like, but no.
I appreciate your opinion, Garcetti. I'll take that into account, but no.
No, I don't want to.
No. I mean, we won't make it. No,
I feel like Dave Chappelle with the Coke face, where he's like, "Give me some of that,
COVID vaccine."
Yeah, give me some of that COVID vaccine. Standing in line, that'll be me
for real. And then, of course, like an idiot stick, I went in and like read the comments under the article, and there were so many people that were like, "You guys are sheep for even wanting the vaccine." I'm like, "Okay, great. If you don't
get out of line,
like I just turned it down at my job." I'm like, "Go fuck yourself." Honestly, like, call me, text me. Mm-hmm. I'll take your spot. I'll be Candace, no vaccine, and take your spot. Like, I'm in.
Oh, God. I don't know, man. I'm so tired. Mm. I'm so tired.
Me too.
I mean, it's January, and I'm, like, exhausted already.
Yeah. Listen, I feel like I had a good week, and it was one of those things where I have been so deathly bored and doing absolutely nothing that this week I had like three things on my to-do list, and I was like, oh gosh, I'm exhausted. I have so much to do. I started school, which was weird because I kind of had like a weird late start thing happen. It's a long story, but anyway, I had all my homework pretty much to do in like 3 days, which was exhausting, but I had a lot to do. And then I had 2 days where I worked with our friend Sarah, who I'll shout out again, who's going to be on Resident Alien, which I'm super excited to watch, comes out Sunday. And so I got to do hair for her for her press junket, which was actually really, really awesome and such a highlight, because I feel like I haven't been able to truly do hair and do what I love in so long that I almost forgot how much I loved it. Aww. It was really getting to a place where I was just like, I don't know, do I even like doing hair? And I'm like, got to do that. And I was like, yes, this is what I miss. I miss doing this.
Oh, that's so, that makes me so happy.
It made my heart feel happy. That's for sure.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, we're just, you know, keep our fingers crossed that, because I also did see, to put a kind of happy ending spin on it, as much as I talk shit on Jeff Bezos, apparently Amazon does want to help out with the vaccine distribution plan. And I'm like, bitch, they can get me almost anything I want in the world next day. Yes, let them help. They know how to get shit to my door. If I could get prime delivery of that vaccine, you better believe I'm all about it.
Sign me up.
I finally got an Alexa. I have not had one. I finally I got an Alexa. It's in my kitchen. I was pretty anti Alexa for a very long time.
Is it like the video screen Echo, or is it like one of those dots? It's what kind you get?
Yeah, it's an Echo, but it's the ball. It's like a big ball.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Sound quality, fantastic. Because I was like, oh, I'm going to use it to like listen to podcasts and stuff while I'm cooking. But I'm still a little creeped out, not going to lie. Like, little sketched out by how well she listens to me, makes me a little uneasy. But goddamn, if it doesn't make you feel like you're living in the future, like, for real. I know this is old news to literally everybody on the planet, because like I'm an old lady who like doesn't, like, I don't trust it. Like, I was slow to adapt to Siri as well. Like, I was like, I don't want Siri, I don't want Alexa, like, keep all this like weird AI, you know, shit out of my life. But man, there is something about like being able to tell a machine to turn on your lights that is like, God, makes you feel powerful, doesn't it?
Yeah. No. And then we had the internet go down for like a little bit the other day, like not that long, like maybe like 20 minutes or so, like right as we were going to bed. And I couldn't remember the last time I had to turn off lights that I was just like, yes. What do I do now? Yeah, do we just go to sleep with the lights on?
You're like, this is some poor people shit. I don't even know. Like, what do I, how do I?
I don't know how this light works. Does it have a clicky? Like, where's the clicky things? Or like a, yeah, totally.
It's amazing how you get so used to, that's just how things are now. That's how lights come on and off. You tell the thing to do it for you. Like,
That's right.
It's bizarre. Yeah.
It's so funny, Keegan, that you say that, because we've had an Echo for a while, just like our regular one with a speaker. But now I got one that's the video for the kitchen, and I do use it for the exact same thing, so that when I'm cooking, I can like listen to my podcast. But I have been so spoiled that like now I can just be like, Alexa, pull up a recipe for, mm-hmm. you know, chicken tortilla mm-hmm. soup or whatever. And it just like pulls up all these recipes, and I can just like look through ones and see like some different ideas.
Dude, you guys know my apartment magical. Is not that big, and now I'm like, I think I need one for every room.
Oh my god, why do I feel the same yeah. way? I need one for the bedroom now.
I'm like, we I don't do. Ever want to have to lift my finger to do anything. I don't want to have to turn on a TV with yep. my human hands ever again.
Yep. Like, no, just
it's like the
voice.
Apple TV that you can just speak in and just be like, what pull up blah blah blah, you know, or like turn on, you know. Wow, we are so spoiled. It's ridiculous.
It really truly I mean truly, like, I finally bought a new Roku remote that has the voice thing on it, because I'm like, I'm magic. Tired of having
tired
to
of typing
manually oh, type God. Shit in, like, I'm done, like yeah. I'm like, if we're yeah. gonna be home all the time, like my at home experience needs to be optimal, okay? Like, mm-hmm. it needs to be flawless. I'm not trying to waste time typing in anything, okay?
Oh my god, so true. Well, who should we fuck, marry, kill this week?
Christina, you brought up that you had seen an article about, or like you saw a tweet of somebody who was doing the brackets.
Yes.
And we started the potato bracket within our friend group, which got out of hand very quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I looked away and I looked back and it was like 60 messages. I was like, oh my god, like I didn't know everybody had that many thoughts on potatoes.
Feelings about potatoes, especially yeah. since potatoes are the most versatile food ever. Like, is there maybe, no, not even, I was gonna say like maybe tomatoes, but like no, like potatoes, so versatile. You can have a baked potato, a mashed potato, French fries, potato chips, like a scalloped,
you name it
hashed. Okay.
I don't know a single person, I don't think I've met a single person in my life that doesn't like potatoes.
I would side eye that person super hard, because it's like yeah. it doesn't even taste the same the different ways that it's prepared. So I'm like, right. how can you say across the board you do not like potatoes? Look, right. listeners, if you know some, if you or someone you know does not like potatoes, I need you to write us a detailed email explaining why. I yes. need, because I to me, it's incomprehensible.
It really is. And I need to know, reasons.
Yeah, because if it's
yeah,
a, if
I just
it's a,
can't fathom it.
Yeah, because if it's a texture thing, because like maybe you think that they're too mushy, then you can fry them, make them crispy. Right. You can have a potato chip. You yeah. know, so I'm like,
So what's your favorite potato, Christina? I feel like yours is baked potato.
Oh, yeah. Loaded baked potato. I lived on those when I first got divorced, like the, because I was the one that did like all of the cooking and all of the food gathering and that sort of thing. So for whatever reason, it just became impossible for me to go to the grocery store. And I also am somebody that enjoys cooking for other people, but I don't necessarily enjoy doing it for just myself. It feels like a lot of work. But I ain't rich enough to be eating Postmates every night. Who's got that kind of money? I'd not make Postmates money. So the only thing I could bring myself to eat for like the entire month of January, I feel like every single day, I just put a potato in the oven and an hour and a half later, I'd have a baked potato. And that's like what I lived off of for legit daily for a month.
I feel like,
what about you, Keegan?
For me, it would be the classic French fry. Mm. Like, because I mean, there's just something about a French fry, and you can dress it up. You can dress it down. Mm-hmm. You can eat them by themselves with just some salt. You can dip them in ketchup, or you can load it up with chili and cheese. Like, you can really accessorize a French fry any way you want, and it's always delicious.
kind of the same thing with a baked potato.
Yeah, I mean,
too.
Because
like,
it's
you
potatoes.
Can really dress that shit up.
You could do anything.
This is what we're talking about.
I know.
I think for me, I'm torn between two things that I think are very similar, and that is the hash brown or the tater tot.
I knew you were going to say that. And they are very similar. They're different.
Yeah.
You know, the other day...
I think I'm doing a tot.
The other day, I got really sad. I got really sad thinking about going to IHOP. Because I was like, man, we haven't been to IHOP in so long. It's been like over a year. And I just got like really sad thinking about like Southern fried chicken, you know, or steak, country fried steak.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about hash browns. And I was like, man, some crispy hash browns. Like, you want them to be like a little crisp around the edge. Mm. Oh,
yep.
So good. But tater tots, also excellent.
Yeah. I'm going to do tots. Mm. I think that's the thing about potatoes across the board, because the same thing you said, Keegan, about French fries is the way I feel about tots.
Mm-hmm. Dress them up, dress them down.
Yeah. I've gone to fancy restaurants where they've like made the tots from scratch. You know what I mean? And they have like bacon and cheese in them. And then I've also, I had, you know, Ore-Idas out of the bag in the oven. And it's
just as good.
Yeah. This is going to be hard. Wow.
This is,
I don't know if
I think I know what I'm going to do,
so
actually.
So hard. Okay.
And okay. So I think that I'm going to kill the French fry. And here's why.
Whoa. I didn't see that coming.
I love a French
fry. I really didn't see that
Listen,
coming.
I know. And here's why. Because for as many good French fries as I've had, I've also had shoestring French fries from fucking Shake Shack or not Shake Shack, but whatchamacallit?
In-N-Out.
Nope.
Oh, In-N-Out's fries are terrible. Yeah.
They are terrible. Oh, it's true. God. They are. They're not good.
And so that's the thing, right? So you got to be, it's, you just got to be so specific. Like I don't know that I it's just they're inconsistent, right? And I just, I want the consistency.
Okay.
I want those good, crispy Burger King fries. Once they, you know, they're warm, they're hot, like they're great hot. They're not good cold. They're very finicky. And I just want something that's got a little less high maintenance.
It's like if you're dating someone and you feel like you have to walk on eggshells because you never know which kind of version is going to show up.
Oh, God.
First of all, just call out that none of us picked mashed potatoes? I feel like that's an obvious choice that none of us went with here.
I'm fine with that.
Oh, I fucking love a mashed potato.
I mean, I love a mashed potato. It just is bland. I mean, like, I don't know.
Wow.
I think we picked the right three.
I'm like so offended.
I think I'm gonna fuck a tater tot. Consistent. I've never had a bad tater tot. I think that you know, it's going to be good. Again, you have the options like I would have with French fries. So I can spice it up with little Zatarain's if I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to marry a baked potato because a baked potato, consistent. Once again, it's hard to fuck up a baked potato. It's consistent. It's a great base. It's a good foundation. It's going to be there for you, whether you want it to be covered in like something healthy, like a broccoli, and then unhealthy it with a bunch of cheddar cheese. Like, there's just a lot of options, but it's consistently good.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, feel
That's
like
just
you
where
can.
My head's at.
I think I feel like you can dress up baked potato too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Baked potato can be.
You
fancy.
Can take it home to your family,
and baked potato can also be, you know, Wendy's.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Be down to earth, or you know, fancy schmancy.
Baked potato is never going to embarrass you in front of your friends either. You know what I'm saying?
No. He's great at parties. I don't think people do baked potato bars enough.
I agree. Mm. I agree.
Yeah. Oh, man. This one's a hard one for me.
Yeah. I mean, how do you pick a favorite child, right?
Exactly. Like, I love all three so much. I got to say, oh, man, you made a good point about French fries. And just, if you're dating somebody, but goddamn, when French fry is McDonald's French fry.
When French fries are good, French fries are so good.
That's right. Like, I mean, it's true.
And when I think about these three, because this is how I'm having to think about it. If I had to never have one again, I don't think I could give up the French fry for the rest of my life. Like, if I could, I just can't quit you, right? Like, you know, good, bad.
You'll be better next time.
Ugly. You'll be better next time. If I've had a bad French fry, will I still order French fries the next time? Yeah, I still will. Yeah. I'll keep going back to that toxic relationship.
What are you gonna do, get a salad?
You know, yeah, 100% of the time. So I think for me, I'm probably gonna fuck a French fry.
I was just going to say the same thing. Yeah. I don't think I can marry a French fry. I think there's just too much in between me and Loaded Baked Potato. There's history. There's a true love there, unlike anything else. It's just perfect. Like, I love Loaded Baked Potato. Has been there for me through thick and thin. Yeah, so we're soulmates, truly. But French fries, oh my God, that is like that one night you can't get out of your head and you just keep going back for more. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, it's kind of hard for me because I love a baked potato. I love a baked potato, but I feel like I have had the occasional bad experience with a baked potato if it's not cooked long enough. You cannot rush a baked potato. A baked potato has to come in its own time. Because if you have a baked potato that was not cooked long enough, it is hard. It's hard. Yes. It has hardened towards you. You know what I mean? So I feel like a baked potato is really like a right time. You got to get with the baked potato at the right time. And if you can do that, that baked potato will love you back forever.
Oh my God, you know? Eric's my baked potato.
There you go. See, so I do think I'm gonna marry the baked potato. I do think I am gonna marry the baked potato. You gotta get it at the right time. You gotta really want it and work for it. But once you do, because the baked potato also takes the most, like, you gotta prep, you gotta buy toppings, effort. You know what I mean? Like, so
like any good marriage, like it takes effort.
Exactly. It takes effort. So effort and patience. I will marry a baked potato for sure.
There's a lot we can learn about relationships through a baked
potato.
Through
the lens of a baked potato. Absolutely. You want that baked potato kind of love, you know?
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, I love it.
And I love a tater tot. Don't get me wrong. I used to go to Sonic and get like the chili cheese tots from there like all the time. Like, so fucking good. They're so good.
Have you ever had the tater tots that are more like the disc?
Yeah.
Oh, they're like,
oh, yeah. Oh,
God damn. Those are good too.
Did you ever have the ones? I think they have ones with faces on them. Like when you were a kid, like the frozen ones that they would give you. Oh my gosh. So good.
Have you ever had a bad tater tot? That's the question.
When they're cold. I've had, like, they're kind of like fries to me. Like, when they get cold, they're not very good. But other than that, I mean, yeah, it's kind of hard to fuck them up. Like, it's like fried.
Yeah.
Shredded potato.
Yeah, I will say when I'm at the house and I'm, like, looking for a side like that, I think that tater tots turn out better in your house than French fries do.
Unless you have someone. Totally. My grandma used to make homemade French fries. Where she would like chop the potatoes, like heat the grease and like season them herself. Oh my God. Oh my God. If you've had like a homemade French fry, like, but I agree, like from the bag frozen, you want a tater tot before you want a French fry.
Correct. 100%. And I've tried many different brands.
Crinkle
over
cut,
the years.
All of them.
Should we have?
Crinkle cut's probably the ones that hold up the best in your own oven.
Correct.
But they still are not.
But they're not like, as good because they're kind of mushy on the inside. Like, yeah. I feel like we should have a spin-off potato cast podcast because I feel like we could talk about potatoes.
All day.
All day. No, I really could. And I would.
It'd
Idaho,
be an hourly if show.
If you're listening and you need. If this is the potato content you're looking for,
hit me up.
I'm ready. We do have a new patron, and that is Ashley Jones Polin, who is a good friend of mine.
Awesome.
I've known her for years and years. Like, oh my gosh, we have probably known each other for almost 20 years now. Isn't that wild wow. to think about. Wow. It's like, you know, that's insane because I've known her since middle school. She recently got married. So Ashley, let me know if that's how you pronounce your new last name. Is it Polin? Either way, we are so lucky to have you. I'm honestly, I'm always kind of like thrown when people I know listen to the podcast consistently and enjoy it, you know. Thank you so much for, you know, being a good friend and listener and now patron. We love you.
Yay. Aww, thank you. All right. You guys want to take five and we'll come back with stories?
Yes.
Sounds good.
Good.
And we're back. Okay. I will kick us off with stories today. This is from Reddit. It says, I was a sophomore in college and went on the worst Tinder date of my life. This guy invites me to a really bro-y college bar. We all know the place.
Yep.
He shows up in sweatpants. We all know the guy.
Guys, sweatpants.
I picture like, I'm like, okay, he's probably wearing sweatpants and open-toed shoes. That's kind of like the vibe I'm getting, you know? I bought us the first round of drinks, but he never got another round, so that was it. I definitely wasn't drunk enough for this. I'm trying to make the most out of it because he's cute and I only wanted something casual anyway. I was truly trying to make conversation, but every answer he gives is about football. Now listen.
Okay, wait. I'm in.
For me, I was like, maybe this would be okay for Cassie. For me, oh my God, nothing would make me like want to fall asleep on the table faster.
But see, it's like read the room. You know what right. I mean? Like, you're allowed to have passions that are different from the person that you're dating for sure. But you got to realize when the person that you're talking to is like, yeah, that's not my thing. And move on to something else.
Yeah. I mean, okay, hold on. Okay. He said he was on the team. A Google search later proved that was false. I asked him what he did for fun. Football. What other hobbies he had? Working out after football practice. Does he enjoy any games or anything? Madden. So here's my issue here. Okay. It's not just the football, right? Like the football already for me, you know, I'm not a huge sports person, but it's cool if you are. Like, that's fine. But every answer, like, you're not even a multifaceted enough human being to have anything else going on.
Football is not a personality.
Yes, exactly. I would feel this way about just about anything, even if it was anything. Like something that I was interested in. But especially if you're talking at your date. You know what I mean? He also took a phone call in the middle of the date. While he was talking on the phone right in front of me, I was looking at the decorative signs all over the bar. I was too young to get up and walk out, but I really wish I would have at this moment. When he hangs up the phone, he sees me scanning the signs on the wall and says, so you like to read, huh?
Oh my God.
So wow. You like to read.
Oh my God. Yep.
Oh my God.
Yep, that's what I'm doing. Oh God.
Left shortly after. He insisted on walking me home. We get to my apartment building. He goes in for a hug. While grabbing me, he whispers, I was really hoping to get a piece of this tonight.
Ugh.
Mm. No.
I hate it. I hate everything about
personal
this
foul.
Man.
Ugh.
Mm. Holding.
Flag on the
5-yard. 5-yard penalty. Get 5 yards away from me immediately.
Oh, God. I say maybe next time and run away. I didn't hear from him again until the following weekend, Saturday night, 2 a.m.
Ugh.
This guy is a walking stereotype. Like, this is a walking stereotype of the college bro. Like, oh my God. Ugh. I hate it.
Yeah. You're hopeful. You know what I mean? He sounds 23.
Oh, or gross. 22.
Even younger. Yeah. 21, 22.
Yeah.
You know.
Jesus.
Like, he'll find other things in life. But
I hope
he's just
so.
Not there yet.
I hope so. Like, oh. You like to read?
Yes. Walls. Posters on walls. It's my hobby.
Just walls. That's all. I don't read books. Just walls.
Just walls. I like to go into Max and Irma's and just look at the shit on the walls.
Yeah, Barney's Beanery must be just like incredible.
Delight.
Nothing but road signs.
All right. This one's from Reddit. They go, I'm still recovering from the worst first date I ever had. This was a few years ago. We were out drinking, having a few laughs. We ordered appetizers. I got bruschetta. Oh my God, it was the best bruschetta. But this thing was just packed with onions and garlic.
Okay.
Oh.
Sounds so freaking delicious, but.
I know. I'm 2 bites into it and realize what a horrible mistake I've made because now my breath is atrocious. Immediately, I start to panic. The first thing I do is try to get him to eat it. Uh-huh. So at least our breath would do. Match.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
But of course, he's gluten fucking free, so he doesn't.
She's so mad about it.
Fucking free. I excuse myself and now I really start to panic. I'm running around the entire bar asking everyone for gum. I'm hounding the bartender. I'm sneaking into the kitchen and asking the kitchen staff for gum. I asked the homeless guy out on the street.
No.
I am talking desperate measures here, people, and no one has gum. I finally decide the only way to fix this is to do a shot of 151 to burn it off.
Honey.
Oh my God. Well, your decision making. Are you 20?
Yeah, because I'm for real. Like, if anybody wants to judge my breath after first of all, if you take me on a date, just know I'm ordering the thing with the most garlic on the menu because a bitch likes garlic. And if you have issue with it or you can't see past it, then we don't need anything further. Sorry. If garlic's a deal breaker for you, it's a deal breaker for me.
Yeah, I'm like, whenever I see a recipe that says 1 clove of garlic, I'm like,
who wrote that?
Who? Who's doing that?
You need at least three to five. Always.
Exactly.
Always.
Always. At least
always
three.
Always 3 to 5.
I'm like, they meant 3. So I end up doing 4 shots of 151 before I realize it's hopeless. So now I'm 4 shots deep on a date where I've spent well over an hour avoiding my date so that I can try and fix this breath that is just as bad as it was when I started. By the end of the night, this guy dumps me, and in my drunken state, I cover my mouth, slump forward, and ask him, is it my breath?
Oh, no.
And he says, no, it's your personality.
Look, she opened the door for that. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, you opened the door
for that. No, bitch, I just saw you running around like a crazy person for 20 minutes.
You went outside and
asking
asked
an entire restaurant.
For gum. My girl.
But
like
4 rounds of 150.
What? Is it my breath?
No, ma'am.
No.
You know what? I kind of like that honesty. I feel like we should move forward with that. It's just like, look, it's your personality.
It's not your breath. It's your personality.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God. Okay. So my story came to us from our inbox and it says, hi, ladies. I've been behind on the podcast, so I missed the call for Meet the Parents stories around the holidays. Sorry. But the topic reminded me of my Meet the Parents story from my first boyfriend. I started dating my boyfriend, first boyfriend, right after we graduated from high school. We were friends for a while, so I had met his mom briefly and at events in the past, but never really got to know her. Our first Thanksgiving break from college, she invited me over for dinner with my boyfriend and his younger brother. I was super nervous as he was very close with his mom, and I knew her impression of me was going to be very important. We sit down for dinner, and she had made some sort of like chicken and rice meal that looked delicious. Side note, the place setting was a spoon and a knife. And immediately I felt awkward because how the fuck am I going to cut this chicken without a fork? I still don't really know the answer.
Well, let me tell you,
this is
Anthony doesn't use a fork for fucking anything. Anytime I make I make anything, especially if rice is involved, he eats it with a spoon. Like, and he uses the spoon like a fork, like to hold down while he cuts.
Oh,
I don't know.
I wonder if this is like a cultural thing. Maybe
I don't know. I don't think it's a cultural thing for Anthony. I think it's a how can I get the food from the plate to my mouth. The fastest.
That is very Anthony. You're absolutely right. You nailed it.
Sorry to derail this, but I need to bring this up because Eric pointed this out to me the other day. So when I'm eating like a steak, for instance, mm-hmm. I hold my fork in my right hand to eat. Mm-hmm. So when I'm eating my steak, I use my right hand with the fork to hold it down, and I pick my knife up with my left hand and cut it.
I can't do that.
I can't do that either.
He's like, that's so weird. It is weird. I don't know why I learned it that way. But
my mom was a super snobby, into etiquette person growing up. So I eat with my left hand. I eat with my fork with my left hand, unless it's something that doesn't need cut or doesn't have, like, I will, like, if I'm just eating macaroni and cheese, I'll eat with my right hand, right? I'm predominant, right? But if I'm cutting something or eating a steak, I cut with my right hand and eat with my left.
I think it's
and I don't trade.
Funny that we all do something different because I do trade. I when I'm cutting, I hold my knife with my right hand, my dominant hand, and my fork with my left. But then when I go mm-hmm. to eat, I put my fork in my right hand.
Okay, I need an etiquette expert to write in. I'm pretty sure Cassie, you're
so
probably
I do know
right.
this.
Yeah, like yeah.
So I do know the answer to this
is not the way it should be, but it's easiest.
So
for
the
me.
The etiquette way to do this, the European etiquette I've learned is to do it the way I do it. The way my mom taught me, which is to cut left, do not switch hands. That's the way they eat in Europe, and that is apparently the way that she was taught when she was younger. That was etiquette.
Wait, you cut your steak
with your left hand.
Nope. With your dominant hand, you cut with your. It's not even about dominant. It's right hand cut, left hand eat. So fork. And that's why when the place setting is set in front of you, you'll see that your knife is on the left, your forks are on your forks are on your left, and your knives and spoons are on your right.
Oh.
That's how a table setting is, right? So, gotcha. But there is an American version of etiquette that does suggest that you cut multiple pieces. So you cut like 1, 2, 3, 4 pieces, set down your knife, eat those pieces with your right, then
yeah.
Do again.
That's what I do.
And so, but you, yeah.
But you know, so here's the thing. Can we all agree in the year 2021 that eating etiquette is dumb? And like,
so stupid. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
And you should just eat however you want.
Yeah.
However, exactly. I would be thrown. I'm not going to lie. If a spoon was my only choice,
I did not have
a fork available. Fair. That would be weird for
fair,
me.
Fair. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back to dinner. I must have figured out how to maneuver the chicken without a fork because I was able to eat the chicken and rice and make conversation with his mom. Things are going well. His mom and I are getting along great, and the food was delicious. Then I took a bite of my chicken and I realized I had a chicken bone in it. I looked around at everyone else's plate and I didn't even notice them picking around any bones, so I panicked. What? This might sound stupid, but I don't think I've ever eaten a piece of chicken with a bone in it besides like a fried chicken wing or something like that before. So I assumed this was a horrible mistake on his mom's part when she was cooking and she must have forgotten to remove the bone. I didn't want to be rude and pull the bone out of my mouth and make her feel embarrassed. So I swallowed the bone whole.
No, oh, girl, you are going to rip your asshole open.
Just imagine swallowing a bone hole.
I kept
eating and the chicken and came across more bones. Everyone else's plate was still void of bones, so I just kept swallowing the chicken bones as I got a bite of them. So I was not to upset his mom and continue with the dinner smoothly. I ended up staying with this boyfriend for a long time, and I finally confessed the story to him over our 3-year anniversary dinner.
I'm going to need more detail about what happened in the bathroom 3 hours post this.
Right.
Like, the stomach ache.
You can't eat chicken bones.
The stomach ache as it progresses through your intestine. Oh, like, Jesus. Like little razor
blades.
It turns out
the chicken she uses to make this meal always has bones in it, and they all just know to eat around the bones. The fact that I didn't have any bones left on my plate at the end of dinner probably made his mom think I was a freak. Luckily, she must have overlooked it. This because the two of us went on to have a really good relationship, and she is one of the things I miss the most about that relationship. I go, hope that you guys get a kick out of my chicken bone story. This podcast has been a bright spot in a horrible year, and I love you guys so much.
We love you too. I have to say that that story is the perfect testament to how stressful meeting family members is. Like, meeting your significant other's family for the first time is, I will swallow chicken bones whole. Like stressful. Like,
well, wow. She's lucky she didn't end up in a hospital. Honestly, that's all I could think of is like a dog eats a chicken bone and it could like pierce her stomach, right? Like, that's what my brain thinks.
Like, I'm amazed that she was not like in more pain from that. Oh,
yeah, and. I feel like we've talked about it on the podcast before. Like, I think meeting the parents is stressful for everybody. It's stressful for the person whose family it is, because I know I'm always like, I know my dad's sense of humor. I know these things. Right. And I'm just like, please let it go. Like, I get stressed. I know the person who's meeting the parents for the first time is stressed. And then I got to kind of think that my family's a little stressed, too.
Oh, like, sure. Right. They want to make a good first impression, too, I would assume. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, man, that situation. But here's the thing. Like, I'm the type of person,
God. Amazing.
Will I swallow mushrooms, which are a food that I don't like, that if somebody else prepares a dinner for me and it has mushrooms in it, will I eat them? Yes, because I'm trying to be polite. Will I swallow a chicken bone?
No,
ma'am.
But we also know, and that's the thing too that I thought was like funny, because I'm like, okay, I can totally get that. Like, there are definitely gotta be households. Mm-hmm. Like, my family, I grew up, we made chicken and the bone was in, and I would have eaten around it. Too, I understand that. But I guess I wouldn't have ever considered that somebody may have not ever had chicken that had bone in it.
Yeah. Right. And some people are very about chicken with the bone in. Like, I know I have friends who don't eat chicken that has the bone in it because it freaks them out. So, I mean, I totally see how that could be a thing as well. It's just, it's so interesting, the cultural, like, differences. Anytime you're getting to know someone new or their family, just, like, the way that households are run, some households have poop knives, you know? Like, we've learned.
Oh, my God. So, like, no, they don't.
Every house is different, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's my turn for Crazy in Love this week. This story.
I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. This story is one that I feel like everyone is familiar with, even though they don't know that they are. So I had remembered, you know, hearing about it in passing and thought it had a Crazy in Love twist to it, and it definitely did. So I am going to be talking about the case of Blanche Monnier today. All right.
Okay.
So Blanche Monnier was born on March 1st, hi Pisces, 1849 in Poitiers, France. And the Monniers were extremely well regarded. They were these conservative bourgeoisie, you know, old noble family, right? And Blanche's mother, Louise, was a very strict disciplinarian. She was kind of a domineering woman towards everyone in the family, including her husband and also her son, Marcel, as well as Blanche, of course. Despite the fact that she was so domineering and had this like really kind of domineering nature, she was very well respected by those in the community and had even won the Committee of Good Works Award for her generous contributions to the city. Now, I don't know what happened to Blanche's dad, but he is not mentioned very much in any of these articles or at all. He's really not mentioned at all. I think I saw one thing that mentioned him and just mentioned that he wasn't around. So I think he passed away when she was pretty young. But even after Blanche's brother, Marcel, grew up and was old enough to have a life and family of his own, and, you know, he went to law school, he was a very good student, he continued living with and having his life completely dominated by his mother, Louise. So if that tells you anything about the kind of woman this was, right?
I don't like that.
Right.
So Blanche was described as a joyous and playful woman, and she was an absolute stunner, like extremely beautiful. Like when you look at pictures of her, she looks like this classic ideal of a Gibson girl. Now, don't Google her right now. I know everybody's thinking about it.
Okay.
You're thinking about Googling her. Don't do it. Wait, because you're going to ruin the story. So don't do it. But just trust me, like she was so beautiful. By 1874, at the age of 25, Blanche was ready to kind of like settle down and marry. And actually, 25 was, you know, on the upper end at that time of like actually getting married. And because she was this renowned beauty, she had no shortage of suitors from aristocratic families like lining up to marry her. So think of her as kind of the Daphne Bridgerton of this situation, right? Like she's very well sought after, eligible from this incredible family. Still, even though her mother wanted her to marry, you know, and marry into a good family, she was extremely protective of Blanche and very, very choosy, right? So I think that that's probably part of why she was still unmarried at this time, because her mom wanted the best of the best, right, for her daughter.
Only the Duke will
do. Right, exactly, exactly. So when Blanche managed to meet a man who she actually fell in love with, it was kind of a big deal for her. It was like the first time that she was like, oh my gosh, I'm having these like actual feelings. My mom's not involved. I don't know where she met him, but mom clearly was not around. And I've never been able to find this man's name, which seems very weird because we know other details about him, but I cannot figure out what his name was. What we do know about him was that he was significantly older than Blanche, and that despite being a lawyer, he was not wealthy and he did not come from an aristocratic background.
Mm.
So
I don't know what mom's going to say.
Right. And so did Blanche. So fearing her mother's disapproval, the two began a romantic relationship in secret. This affair went on for a while. And eventually, you know, of course, in communities like this, we've all seen Bridgerton once again.
Mm-hmm.
Rumors began to swirl about the relationship in high society circles. I mean, this was like the hottest lady in town, super hot. And she had plenty of like young, wealthy, high society suitors. And she'd taken up with this commoner, this like poor dude, right? Scandalous. Some even went so far as to speculate that Blanche had had a child in secret with this guy. But I mean, highly unlikely that that happened. But, you know, bored rich people, they got nothing else
talking
to talk about.
Shit.
They're talking shit. They're talking mad shit. So, of course, eventually the rumors got back to Louise and she was furious. She forbade Blanche from seeing this man ever again, let alone marrying him, which Blanche had said was her intention. She wanted to marry this guy. But Blanche fought back and the two engaged in a number of extremely heated arguments. So that must have been a fun household at that time.
Hmm.
Blanche flat out refused to end the relationship and continued to find ways to meet up with this guy in secret. So she would often sneak out in the middle of the night to go meet this guy. And this went on for a little while before Blanche's mother, Louise, decided that a more drastic measure needed to be taken to prevent Blanche from seeing him. So she told Blanche that she would not be allowed to marry the man. And if she didn't concede to end the relationship, she would be locked away in one of the attic rooms until she saw reason. So.
Jesus. Mm-hmm.
Now I know this story.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Same.
Oh. Still, Blanche told her mother that she wouldn't relent. She was like, sorry about you. You're not going to rule my life this way, right? So Louise had the servants prepare a bed in the attic and had the windows boarded up so that no light could come through into the room. And one night,
I have chills.
When Blanche was returning home from seeing her lover, she was sneaking up the stairs quietly to get to her bedroom. Louise and her brother Marcel were waiting at the top of the stairs. They pounced on her as soon as she got to the top of the stairs, dragged her to the room, stripped off all of her clothing, and chained her to the bed before locking her inside the room. So there's a padlock on the outside of the door.
Listen, is there any feeling more terrifying than when you've snuck out of the house and your parents catch you?
No, and especially not if your mom's Louise.
No shit, right?
Like, yeah. For real.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, and Louise felt that her daughter would relent quickly, but Blanche was stubborn, and she refused to give in to her mother's demands, and she was just like, I'll just wait this out. Like, eventually my mom will realize that, like, I'm not going to give in, and she'll let me out of here, right? In the time immediately following Blanche's incarceration, her mother and brother explained her absence by saying that she had gone to stay with relatives in the United Kingdom and eventually had met and married a man in Scotland and was not able or willing to come back to visit. Like, they were just like, oh, she started a new life in Scotland.
That's how pregnancy rumors start. You were gone for a while. No one knows.
Nobody knows. Exactly. Yeah, that's probably, they were like, oh, I bet she got pregnant by that dude she was fucking around with for the last year or whatever. Eventually, Blanche's suitor died unexpectedly in 1885, never having known what became of Blanche. So she kind of just disappeared. Who knows what he thought? Like, if he believed the rumors, I imagine if he thought that something was really going to happen to Blanche, even if he did, he wouldn't have gotten a lot of support from anybody because he was this kind of like penniless commoner and they were this aristocratic family that was very well respected and well known. So who knows what happened there? Again, I think it's weird that I know what year he died and it's consistent across articles, but don't know his name. Who knows?
But nobody knows this guy's name.
Maybe his family was like, keep his name out of the papers. We don't want to be associated.
Keep his name off your thin ass lips.
Out of your thin mouth. Your thin mouth. Okay. Oh, my God. I love it. Okay. On May 23rd, 1901, 25 years after Blanche first went missing, the Paris Attorney General received an anonymous letter that read in part, Monsieur Attorney General, I have the honor to inform you of an exceptionally serious occurrence. I speak of a spinster who is locked up in Madame Monnier's house, half-starved and living on a putrid litter for the past 25 years. In a word, Jesus in her Christ. Own filth. So the police were skeptical at first. I mean, the Monniers were an extremely prominent family. Still, they were like, okay, we'll do a cursory search of the house. Like, we'll just walk around, see what we see, right? So when they arrive, they knock on the door, and they could see Louise kind of peeking through the curtains at them, but she didn't let them inside. She didn't open the door. So they were like, all right, well, we weren't suspicious, but that's kind of weird. So they decided to break in at that point. And at first, they didn't see anything out of the ordinary. Like, everything seemed to be in place. However, when they were walking by the stairs downstairs, they noticed a putrid odor coming from upstairs.
Oh my God.
Which, you know how bad that has to be if it has traveled down the stairs. So they followed the smell and it led them to a room that had been padlocked shut from the outside. So they smashed the lock, they entered the room, and the smell was so overpowering that the officers were unable to stay in the room for more than a few minutes at a time. The room was also pitch black. The windows had been boarded shut and covered with a thick curtain. One of the police officers wrote in his statement, quote, "We immediately gave the order to open the casement window. This was done with great difficulty. The old dark curtains fell a heavy shower of dust. To open the shutters, it was necessary to remove them from their hinges." So they were, they've been shut like that for 25 years. So getting them off, I mean, it took like a great effort from like everybody involved. When they finally opened the window to let in the fresh air, sunlight poured into the room and revealed a skeleton-like figure chained to the bed. One policeman described the state of Blanche Monnier and her bed this way. The unfortunate woman was lying completely naked on a rotten straw mattress. All around her was formed a sort of crust made from excrement, fragments of meat, vegetables, fish, and rotten bread. We also saw oyster shells and bugs running across Mademoiselle Monnier's bed. So she had been
fucking nightmare.
Horrifying. I mean, and this, I'm going to warn people before they Google her image or look, I'm sure we'll post it. So like just a warning, because it's terrible to look at. And I know people who struggle with eating disorders specifically, seeing this image is really terrible. But this image is kind of famous. Like you might have seen it around of her when they found her.
I've seen it. It's
horrifying. She's bones. She's naked. Her hair is like so long. And she'd been unable. They kept her chained to that bed naked like that, basically, since they put her in there and didn't even let her.
Didn't she die of like bed sores?
You would think. I mean, I don't know. But I don't know if she couldn't get up or what the deal was, but she had been, you know, using the restroom on herself in bed, without getting up for a period of time. And I don't know if it was always that way or if she just became so weak that like she could no longer get up to move to another part of the bed. I don't know, but that's basically what they said. So, and I'm going to talk numbers here, which again, I know is triggering for some people who are recovering from eating disorders. So if that's an issue for you, please feel free to fast forward through this part. So the now 50-year-old Blanche weighed only 50 pounds. 50 pounds.
Years old.
Yeah.
50 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, again, there's a photograph. If you want to see it, it's very famous. But just a warning to anybody who's sensitive before you go look at that.
That's
horrible.
Dude, you have to wonder, like, if it's just spite keeping you alive at that point. And it's like, do you want to go through life being right or just getting to live your life? Like you have to think if you're Blanche, like, I don't know, like maybe after like the first time shitting on myself, I'd be like, all right, you know what? Like knowing who your mother is and how stubborn she is, like why wouldn't she tap out? Mm-hmm. That's
right.
Terrible.
I mean, I don't think we'll ever know the truth. I'll talk about that a little bit later when I talk about Marcel's defense, because he uses some of that where he's just like, obviously there's something wrong with her, you know what I mean? Okay, so Blanche was taken to the Hotel du hospital, and the doctors thought that she was going to die because she was so thin. And the nurses gave her a bath, and she was at no time was she aggressive with them. She actually kept saying how lovely it was to be clean and how thankful she was to be free and to be breathing air for the first time, like fresh air. But it was difficult for her to be in sunlight because of her sensitivity at that time. So when police were raiding the home, Madame Monnier was sitting in her living room completely calm. They said like she was just, I guess, dissociated, because I don't know. I feel like you might be freaking out.
She forget she was up there?
Yeah. She's like, I don't know.
Oh, my God. She
and Marcel, who was still living at home well into his 50s, at this point, and had not started really a life of his own, were quickly arrested. And Marcel tried to claim that Blanche had brought this upon herself.
Ugh.
Again, yeah. So the media did go crazy. It had all of the components that made for this scandalous, incredible story. Again, she was like this poster image of like a beautiful woman at this time.
This story hath everything.
It does. Beautiful socialites, forbidden romances, aristocratic families with dark secrets, right? So they started to gather outside of the Monnier home, and I guess Louise had been allowed to go home on bail, because she died 15 days after her arrest. And they say it was due to a heart attack because there was a furious mob of people outside her home. Though a lot of people speculate that maybe she poisoned herself to avoid prison time. So,
yeah, she kind of seemed, if you're that
stubborn,
mm-hmm. you're doing things on your own terms 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she was probably very old at this point, but yeah, I kind of feel like, what are the chances that you die 15 days after your arrest? I don't know. So during Marcel's trial, he said that they believed that Blanche was mentally ill. He said that only a crazy person would choose to stay in solitary confinement over agreeing to break up with someone. And this was why they kept her locked up, because she was nuts. And they figured she must be crazy, and so she deserved to be imprisoned. And he also claimed that she never tried to escape the room, which further pointed towards her insanity. Not that she could have. Again, she was chained,
right,
and it took to a bed. How many officers to get the boards off the windows? Like, there's no way.
Yeah, and now I feel bad for saying why wouldn't she give up? And maybe it makes me think that perhaps she did.
That's what I think.
And they, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and. Yeah, I think she probably did. Like, who wouldn't? You know what I mean?
I feel the same way. I feel like she probably did at some point try and say,
and they're like, you don't mean it.
Or, yeah, because I feel like her mom in particular is so vicious. And there has to, with personalities like this who are willing to do things like this to people, there has to be something deeper going on. They're getting something else out of this. And honestly, she was probably looking for an excuse to be able to do something like this.
And they probably, but when she did give up, Louise seems like she would be smart enough to be like, well, we can't let her go.
Yeah, we can't let her go tell somebody about this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And honestly, she was, again, numbers. But she was 50 pounds, so it almost seems like they were waiting for her to die. They were just kind mm-hmm. of can we wait this out? Because clearly they weren't feeding her every day or, consistently for this to happen in the first place,
Oh, wow. My God.
So neighbors came to testify at the trial, and they claimed that they thought they could hear screams from a woman shouting police out of the blocked window. This is most likely where the anonymous letter came from, though there were also rumors that one of the household servants had confided in her boyfriend who wrote the letter that led to her rescue. So no one knows to this day who wrote that letter. But it could have come from any of those sources. This is the Kitty Genovese effect, right? Mm-hmm. Of you have neighbors who are like, yeah, no, we heard stuff coming from that house, and nobody did anything about it.
That's wild. I don't want to get involved.
Or somebody else will do it.
Prominent family. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So Marcel Monnier was initially convicted, but later was acquitted on appeal. He was deemed mentally incapacitated and under the influence of his domineering mother. Though the judges criticized his choices, which seems like a light way of putting that. They criticized his choices and found them reprehensible. They found that the duty to rescue did not exist in the penal code at that time. That was significant enough to convict him at that time. So,
wow.
Though Blanche was able to make some progress in the hospital, and she even was able to put a little bit of weight back on, she, of course, suffered lasting psychological problems due to her confinement. She was eventually diagnosed with anorexia and schizophrenia, among other things, having no one to care for her because she sure as hell was not about to go back living with her brother. Blanche was committed to the Blois psychiatric hospital where she lived out the rest of her days, eventually passing away in 1913. So
wow.
There is some speculation. I just want to point this out because I think it's an interesting thing to talk about, especially in the day, you know, when it was in all the magazines and in, or the newspapers rather, talking about Blanche. There was some speculation that she had psychological problems before she was locked away, and they pointed to her rebellious nature, like the fact that she defied her mother in the first place and was having this secret relationship, as an indication that she had issues before she was locked up and that they weren't totally caused by the fact that she was locked in a pitch black room and not cared for, chained to a bed for 25 years. And I just want to say, I think that's bullshit.
She's got issues. They're called her mom.
I mean it's the same thing that they were pulling 100 years later in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The 1940s and 50s. She's when hysterical. They were shipping people off to get lobotomized.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, oh, she's got, you know, she's
she got likes
a mental
to have
problem
sex,
it's like,
or she's,
oh, she's got an opinion.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
She won't do exactly what we tell her to do as the prominent, beautiful daughter of this aristocratic family, then there's something psychologically wrong with her. She has a will of her own, so there's something psychologically wrong with her. And it's just
looking
another
at you,
form.
Rosemarie Kennedy.
Yeah, yes. Uh-huh. It's such a, you know, it's, I don't know, it's awful. And I know this story was kind of depressing. Sorry about that.
No, I'm actually, I'm shocked that that hasn't been turned into like a horror movie. Do you know what
Honestly.
I mean? Because it is the thought of solitary confinement, and perhaps it's even more chilling now, given the quarantine of the past year mm-hmm. that we've gone mm-hmm. through. But there are numerous studies showing how damaging it is. Like, humans are not meant to be confined.
And the
like
dark.
It's
like you're not only are you alone, which is damaging enough. I mean, it's actually deemed to be cruel and unusual punishment, solitary confinement on its own. But in addition to that, you're being starved. And you are mm-hmm. in a room without sunlight, because we have to assume that these officers raided the house during the day. So if they're saying they went into this room and it was so pitch black that they didn't see anything in the room until they were able to like pry the hinges off of the windows, it means that she was living in there in total darkness for knows how many, you know, for 25 years. Like,
I'd go crazy within minutes. Like, there.
Oh, yeah.
My drummer for my old band was like, oh my God, you should go float. You should do the float tank. I'm like, he's like, you're like deprived of all your senses. It's so relaxing. I'm like, that sounds awful. I will have none of that, please. I do not want to sit with my thoughts for 2 minutes at all.
Same.
I would lose my Full goddamn same. Mind. So.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, it's such a terrifying thing. I wish there was more. I feel like people, of course, got so hung up on the shock of that image and, like, you know, that part of the story that we don't really have a lot more about, like, her life or about this man or their relationship or really anything. But I do think it qualifies as a crazy in love, because it's like,
yeah, for sure.
You know, it's this relationship that. Like, was the catalyst for this terrible thing happening to this woman. But I mean, honestly, this mother was so abusive that anything could have been the thing.
Right.
Right.
So.
Right.
You know.
Wow. Good job. Woof. Good one.
Thanks.
I think I pulled that one aside one time, like around Halloween, because I'm like, this one's terrifying.
It's so scary. I remember seeing the image, which also, I hope Facebook doesn't do this anymore, but I remembered seeing the image, like scrolling through Facebook a few years ago, where it's like, it was one of those clickbaity headlines that was like, you won't believe whatever. And it was accompanied by that image. And of course, it worked. I clicked on it. I read the story. I wish they wouldn't do that, because I do think it's very triggering for people to see an image like that. But I do remember being so shocked, because it was just like, this human being was in this state. And then when you juxtapose how beautiful she was before, you know, it's like so jarring, like so shocking to see.
Yeah, I do think when we post, we should post just her before picture if people do want to look up for themselves that other image, they can.
Feel but, free. Yeah, it's the first thing to pop up when you search her name. So feel like we'll put up the first image and her name, and you know, you can feel free to post that. Cassie, who does our posts on social media, I can send you, if you want, a picture of her mom. I was able to find one image. So if you wanted to post multiple photos, but yeah.
Sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that is a horror movie for sure. Ugh. Imagine what living with that mother was like.
Growing up.
I can't imagine even being help in that house. Like people who were the, you know, servants and whatever, like having to live.
They were questioned too. And people were like, why didn't you do anything? And their excuse was that like they were so scared of this woman and like what she would do to them, which I understand. And also, you know, knowing a little bit about what it was like to be in the lower classes or the working classes during that time period, like you didn't have a lot of options. And honestly, one of the best things for you was to have a job working in an aristocratic household. You didn't want to jeopardize your own position, you know, and I know that that sounds super shitty, but it's like people were just trying to survive. So I don't blame the servants. Yeah. Marcel can go fuck himself. For real. But imagine doing that to your sibling. Like, I just can't. Like, horrible.
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh, that was terrifying.
Sorry. Nightmares.
So what are you guys watching?
Okay, well, I'll go first because, again, I still haven't brought myself to watch anything super serious. I'm just not in a good mental space for that at this moment. So I will give you a palate cleanser after you've listened to this nightmare story. Go watch Pick of the Litter on Netflix. Because, have you guys seen it?
Uh-uh.
Oh my God.
No, but just from the title, if you're talking about baby animals, I swear to fucking God.
I'm going to cry, like thinking about it, like my heart is swelling. Like, so, okay. It is a documentary that follows 5 or 6, Labrador puppies from one litter. They all go off to start their journey to hopefully become guide dogs for the blind. It is so cute because you follow from like when they're born and they're like little bitty ones, and then it follows their entire journey where like they go to like their puppy raisers, and then they have to have like periodic check-ins to see if they're still like in the running to become guide dogs. And you know, not all of them make it to graduation to become guide dogs, but it is so heartwarming. Like
oh my god,
it was like the cute, like over and over, I was just watching it and I was like, whoa. So if you need an endorphin boost, go watch it. It's so cute.
I saw that you it was this week that you watched Repair Shop
also
too,
Repair Shop
you?
I am wrapping myself in a warm blanket of like cozy shows and movies, and Repair Shop, oh my gosh, it is so soothing. And the only
delightful,
the only thing, not even a criticism, but just something that I observed watching Repair Shop, it is so interesting to see the cultural difference between like English people or British people and Americans, because like occasionally they will cry, but oftentimes it's this very understated emotion.
Stiff upper lip.
Yeah, like you know that they're like emotional about it, but they're like, well, that's really lovely. And you're like, oh. Yeah.
Totally.
And we're like openly weeping.
I know.
Same.
If it was me and you just fixed like my grandmama's dollhouse, I would be like, crying, sobbing, you know, amazing. I'm totally loving Repair Shop. So yeah, if you want to go feel all the feels, feel good right now, go watch Pick of the Litter or go watch Repair Shop. Both wonderful suggestions.
That's amazing. That's great. I don't know why, but Eric and I got on this conversation of like seminal movies that I've never seen. And I've never seen Godfather.
What?
No, oh my God, I haven't either. And me and Anthony were going to watch that soon for the same reason. Yeah. Yeah. Oh God.
So yeah, I watched The Godfather and
Godfather 2 is the better
Godfather
one.
Godfather 2 and
yes.
And the third one. Had to say the third one lost me.
Yep.
Did not enjoy that, but I think for me, the second one was my favorite.
I think that's the common consensus, right? The second one's the best one, right?
It's better.
It really got me in the mood, though, to watch. Like, I've also never really gone through Peaky Blinders, so I'm going to start that next because it got me in that. And I'll tell you, it's because in Godfather 2, they do, like, where Vito Corleone, like, came from, where he's, like, started off. So it gives me this, like, real Gangs of New York kind of like vibe. So I was just like, I want to do something around that time period. I'm really in the mood for some kind of gang or mafia activity.
Let me tell you about Peaky Blinders.
Did you ever watch Untouchables?
Huh?
Sorry.
Oh, no, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Let me tell you about Peaky Blinders. It's good. I watched, I think, the first three seasons. I kind of fell off after the third season. However, you want to watch Peaky Blinders just for Cillian Murphy. Like, for, I mean, it's a good show, but even if it wasn't, it wouldn't matter. Like, I guarantee, start watching it and tell me what you think after like two episodes. I know
you got it.
And I know 100% where this is gonna go.
Okay, you got it. I'm excited. So, yeah.
And Tom Hardy's in it for a bit too, right?
He comes in a little bit later.
Can't go wrong there. Did you ever watch Untouchables back in the day?
No, I didn't.
I remember that movie was so good, but it's been, you know, probably since the 80s since I've seen it. So I think that's when it came out, 90s, 80s. There was a period of time, and I feel like this happens a lot, where it was like, there's a lot of movies about World War II. There's a lot of movies about gangsters. Mm-hmm. There's like Goodfellas and all. And it was just like, Goodfellas is one of my favorites. I love that movie. Mm-hmm.
There was a BuzzFeed article that I just saw yesterday. There were like 25 times that Hollywood made the same movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
The Prestige and The Illusionist, like, came out the same freaking year. You're like, why? Mm-hmm.
That is the exact one I was just about to bring up, was Prestige and The Illusionist. And it legitimately was almost, it was like, wait.
I get them confused to this day. Like, I'm still like, which one was in, who was in which?
The Prestige has
Hugh Jackman?
Yes. Okay. And Tom Hardy.
Who was in the other one?
No idea.
Other people?
I don't remember.
I don't know. Oh, I don't remember. Or wait, was Hugh...
Oh, no idea.
Now you got me.
Listeners, let us know. Someone out there is like, The Illusionist is my favorite movie. How dare you?
Right? I have been just, it's been a week for me. It's been crazy busy, and that's been awesome. So I've barely watched TV at all except for at night, and it's just been ER and CSI things to go to sleep to. So that's just where I've been. But I haven't really caught up much, so.
Yeah, we need to, you know, wrap ourselves in blankets. I can't remember what our thing this week. Oh, Eric's been putting on Blacklist before going on to bed. James Spader, Ultimate Shark Eyes.
Dude.
Who's going to watch that?
Speaking of James Spader, I wasn't going to bring it up, but this week Anthony put it on and I did watch it. And the Stargate movie with Kurt Russell and James Spader, the movie from like the early 90s or the late 80s. A mess.
Never saw it.
Oh, a mess. But James Spader, like, look, he definitely has some creepy vibes, but he's a great, like, I enjoy watching him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy watching him too. Absolutely. And that's like the only thing good I can say really about Blacklist. I don't know. Not really my kind of show, but I watch James Spader do The Phone Book. I think he's a good actor. So
he's the best on The Office. It's so funny when he's on The Office.
Yes, Robert California. Well, if you have TV shows that we should watch, stories to tell, if you just want to reach out and say hello, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com. And we love you so much.
Cheers.
Cheers.